"And give the elves every reason to wage war on your kingdom?" said Andokai sharply. "No, we'll have no need of weapons in the woods. Besides, they'll spot us soon enough." She stared at the forest. "What did I tell you? They've seen us already." 4 tall figures detached themselves from the trees. Their longbows were raised, ready to shoot. "Who's going to talk to them?"
"I will," Tungdil said quickly.
He took a step forward, laid his axe on the ground for the elves to see, and walked toward them with measured steps.
"The woods of Alandor have seen a great deal," called the voice of one of the archers, "but never a groundling. Stay where you are and state your purpose."
Tungdil looked at the 4 forest dwellers. They were clad in white leather armor, with swords hanging from their belts. Each wore a white fur cloak, and their fair hair hung loose about their shoulders. As far as Tungdil could tell, their perfectly formed faces were identical. He didn't like them.
"My name is Tungdil Goldhand of the Fourthling Kingdom. My companions and I left our homes to forge Keenfire and destroy Nodon the Doublefold," he declared firmly. "Good friends of ours have died that we might accomplish our goal. If you will permit it, we should like to enter your kingdom."
"There's no need. You won't find Nodon here."
"No, but we'd like to access a tunnel built by our ancestors. The entrance is within your borders. We intend to journey underground to the Black Saddle," he explained briefly. "We heard the Magus is there."
"You're going to kill him with this keen fire, are you? You and a handful of warriors?"
The elf stared at him incredulously.
"I bet Nodon sent you here."
"More than likely," Tungdil said crossly. He felt like boxing the elf's pointy ears. "What a fabulous plan that would be, sending a bunch of dwarves to talk their way into an elven kingdom. He must have known how pleased you'd be to see us. You'd welcome us into your forests, we'd deliver you up to the Magus, and you'd never suspect a thing."
"Nodon's a traitor, not an idiot," muttered Belindis,
not quite softly enough. Tungdil couldn't help grinning, and a fleeting smile crossed the elf's slender face. It wasn't enough to change the dwarf's opinion of him.
"How can we convince you that we mean no harm?"
The elves conferred in their own tongue.
"You can't. Wait here,"
came the unfriendly reply.
"Set foot on our land and we'll kill you."
With that, they disappeared among the mighty trees.
"Ha! We've got them worried,"
Bowindil grinned and crossed his arms in front of his powerful chest.
"That's something."
They made a virtue of necessity and tried to get some rest. There were enough fallen branches to make a roaring fire, and so the time passed. The sun was already sinking behind the forest when the sentries reappeared, this time accompanied by 20 archers and a warrior clad in shimmering palladium, which marked him out as an elf of rank.
"So these are the travellers."
He was handsome, so handsome that he could never look anything but arrogant. Long red hair framed his face, setting off his dark blue eyes.
"A strange group, claiming an even stranger purpose. Let me find out the truth."
He raised his arms, his hands tracing symbols in the air. Andokai responded immediately with a countercharm. On seeing the Magus, the elf broke off in surprise.
"It seems you can use magic. Few among the race of men are capable of that. We heard Nodon had killed them all."
He studied her intently.
"In appearance, you resemble the woman once known as Andokai."
"I am Andokai, the Tempestuous."
She gave the most cursory of curtsies.
"I am weak from our journey, Liutasil, and my magic is no match for yours."
She tapped the hilt of her sword.
"But I have a certain reputation as a swordswoman, and if you care to cross blades with me, I shall prove I am no imposter."
Tungdil's eyebrows rose in surprise. Liutasil wasn't any old warrior. He was Lord of Alandur. The elf laughed, a kind, gentle laugh, but still somehow superior.
"Ah, the Tempestuous Magus. Very well, Andokai. I believe you. But I need to reassure myself. The Alfar have played too many tricks on us of late."
His fingers moved gracefully through the air, conjuring a golden haze that settled over the group.
In an instant, the tiredness that had been eating into every fibre of Tungdil's body lifted, and even his hunger disappeared. Beside him, Namora was gasping with pain, and the air was rent by the same terrible noise that Jerun had made at the gates of Rudacre. The elves knocked their arrows, spanning their bows, and took aim at the pair. Liutasil lowered his arms.
Andukai, it can't have escaped your attention that two of your traveling companions will never be granted entry to our glades, he said carefully.
They're with us, Tungdil said quickly. They may be descended from Teon and Samusin, but we can't defeat Nodon without them.
He pointed to the half-elf.
Namora must wield Keenfire, and Jerun is almost as accomplished a warrior as Boindil here.
He hoped the dwarf would appreciate the flattery.
Orcs and Bognilim flee at the sight of him.
Liutasil pondered the matter while one of the elves advised him in an urgent whisper.
An unusual company indeed,
the elven lord began. Tungdil could tell from his tone that he had conquered his doubts and decided in their favour.
Too unusual to be anything but genuine. You may enter, Arlandor, and proceed through your tunnel.
He turned to leave. Tungdil felt sufficiently encouraged to make his next request.
I beg your pardon, Lord Liutasil, but there is something else we should like to ask. We know that Alfar are laying siege to Arlandor, and that your kingdom is under threat. You won't be able to defend your lands alone. Join us in our fight against Nodon, and we will destroy the perished land. Afterward, you can reclaim your kingdom with our assistance.
The elf gazed at him earnestly.
Your generosity does you credit, but it will take more than a few axes to reclaim our lands. He speaks on behalf of the Dwarven Assembly, explained Gandagar. The assistance he promises would come from my folk, the dwarves of the Fourthling Kingdom, of which I am king. And I know the Secondlings would gladly rid your forests of the Alpha. We've done it before, you know,
Boindil hastened to assure him.
We kicked them out of Greenglade.
Liutasil could no longer disguise his astonishment.
A dwarven king? It gets more and more intriguing.
He beckoned for them to approach.
Come, you shall explain to me why the dwarves are willing to help their oldest enemies and save Arlandor from destruction.
He led the way, and the company followed, escorted on all sides by elven archers.
Well spoken, Tungdil said to Gandagar.
The Fourthling King smiled.
It was our only hope. Personally, I set no store by my status, but perhaps it will convince the Pointy Ears to give us the loan of their army.
They walked on, squeezing their way through the palisade of trees. Jerun struggled at first, encumbered by his armor, but Liutasil gave an order and the boughs swung back, allowing him to pass. Once they had crossed the buffer of pine trees, they entered the forest proper. Even in winter, the oaks, beeches, and maples kept their foliage, and the branches showed no signs of bowing or snapping beneath the heavy snow. The towering trees reminded Tungdil and Boindil of the splendor of Greenglade before it had succumbed to the northern pestilence and vented its hatred on every living thing. The sheer size of the trunks took the travelers by surprise. Even 10 grown men with outstretched arms could not have spanned their girth. Such was the peacefulness and serenity of the forest, that the pain of what they had seen on their journey melted away from them, and they found an inner calm that deepened with every step. Dusk was falling by the time they reached a building that was roughly equivalent to a dwarven hall. There were no stone columns, of course, only trees whose crowns formed a canopy 200 paces above the forest floor, keeping out the rain and snow. A profusion of glowworms bathed the interior in welcoming light. The elves' elegant architecture was the perfect complement to the beauty of the woods. Tungdil had experienced the same feeling in Greenglade, where the carved arches, elven inscriptions, and smooth wooden beams had seemed so at one with the trees. This corner of Arlandor, as yet unconquered by the perished land, was the very essence of harmony. Tiny squares of gold and palladium, each no thicker than gossamer, dangled from the boughs, forming shimmering mosaics that sparkled in the starlight. As the company progressed through the living hall of trees, they passed a hanging mosaic of elven runes, so dazzlingly beautiful that they gasped in admiration.
"I'm not saying that I like the pointy ears,"
whispered Belindis, sneaking a sideways glance at the tiles.
"But their artwork's pretty good."
"Houses made of trees,"
Bowindil shook his head doubtfully.
"I wouldn't feel comfortable. I'd rather have good solid rock above me. It protects you from the elements and it doesn't burn."
"What about volcanoes?" Rodario asked.
"Volcanoes don't burn. Lava does," Tungdil corrected him.
"What do you think lava is?"
The impresario dried up under Narmora's fierce glare.
"There's no point arguing with a dwarf," he finished.
The appearance of the company drew stares from the elves in the hall. It was the first time that a child of the smith had visited their kingdom, and most of them had never seen a dwarf before.
"They all look the same to me,"
said Bowindil, voicing his thoughts as freely as ever. Luckily, he chose to speak in dwarfish.
"Long faces, cheeks as smooth as babies, and so conceited you wouldn't believe. I bet they think Gurdlagard should be thankful that they live here at all."
He gave his head a little shake, and his black plait bounced on his shoulders.
"I know it's not their fault that the fifthlings were conquered, but I'm not ready to trust them yet."
The smith nodded in agreement. Tungdil sighed and stuck his thumbs in Gaselbert's belt. He was glad that Lotionan had raised him. Unlike his companions, he was able to surmount his antipathy to the elves. Liutasil sat down on a wooden throne, the back and arms of which were decorated with rich intarsia of palladium and gold. Amber and semi-precious gems added to the opulence. Stools were brought for the guests, but Jerun had to stand. Rodario's quill moved tirelessly across the page as he took notes, made sketches, and complimented the elves effusively. Fergus stared reverently at his surroundings, while Namora's elf ancestry made it hard for her to relax. Her lips were pressed together in a thin line, and she clung to her stool, appearing agitated and unwell. Liutasil gave an order, and his attendants brought out bread, water, and other offerings, which they served with visible reluctance to Tungdil and friends. The dwarves, whose presence in Alandor had obviously caused an upset, weren't familiar with most of the victuals, but felt obliged to eat. Bowindil was the first to take a wary bite.
"I don't care what it tastes like, you better not complain or spit it out,"
Tungdil warned him sharply. The look of disgust that was beginning to take shape on the warrior's face mutated into a wonky smile. Bowindil forced down his mouthful, swallowed noisily, and reached for some water to wash away the taste.
"Don't touch the yellow stuff,"
was his whispered advice to Belindis, after which he restricted himself to bread. More elves arrived in the course of the meal and took their places on carved chairs to either side of their monarch. They eyed the dwarves with interest. Rodario added a little water to his last remaining drops of ink.
"That should do the trick," he said, smiling.
"Perhaps we could speak of the purpose of your visit," began the elven lord. "I shan't be able to reach a decision until you've told me all that has gone before. Speak only the truth. We will know if you try to deceive us."
"It's my job to convince them."
Tungdil glanced at the others and rose to his feet. He looked into the waiting faces of the elves. Until recently, Liutasil and his kind had been under suspicion of the most heinous betrayal, but the fifthling's story had cleared the way for a new beginning. It was up to Tungdil to forge the alliance that the High King had dreamed of.
"Speak with a scholar's wisdom and authority," he told himself.
More nervous than ever, he took a sip of water, stuck his hands in Gaselbert's belt, and commenced his account of their journey. As he talked and talked, he saw the stars wander above the glittering mosaics, and watched as the dark sky turned a deep shade of blue, the moon paling as the horizon glowed red. Finally, as the sun rose above Gurdlagard, sending its rays through the banks of snow-laden cloud, he concluded his report. Liutasil's blue eyes had not left him for an instant. He had listened to every word.
"I see," he said slowly.
"So it started as a contest for the succession,
and became a mission of far greater consequence. I can see from your faces that the journey has been testing.
Indeed it has, Lord Lyutasil. The dangers were many, but we survived, and now we're here.
Andukai rose, eyes flashing impatiently, her stormy temperament unwilling to tolerate further delay.
We're running out of time. You've heard what we have to say. Make your decision while we still have the choice. Gerdlegard will be lost if we don't act soon.
She took a step forward, knowing full well how imposing she looked.
What have you decided, Lyutasil?
Her eyes searched his handsome face.
What have the elves decided?
Chapter 9. Underground Network. Elven Kingdom of Alandur. Gerdlegard. Winter, 6,234th solar cycle.
Unbelievable!
Bowindel had no intention of letting the matter go. He sat down heavily in a wagon.
How can they need more time? Time to think about what? I've never heard anything so ridiculous. They'll be sorry when Nodorn rules Gerdlegard and the Alfar chop down their forest to make a bonfire. They won't need time for thinking then.
He thumped the handrail angrily.
I'd like to slice four of those elf... orcs in two!
What a blow for Gundrabur,
thought Tungdil disappointedly. He took a seat beside the warrior. I know how you feel, he confessed. I thought Lyutasil would overrule the doubters, but obviously I was wrong. Fergus, who had been examining the track, took a few steps into the tunnel to assess the condition of the rail.
It looks pretty solid. There's a bit of rust, but nothing serious. It's almost as good as new.
Satisfied, he returned to the wagon and sat down beside Narmora.
Let the journey begin.
The company had stayed the night in the forest while the elves were conferring. Alandur's beds were the softest in Gerdlegard, which suited the humans very well. The dwarves, unaccustomed to such luxury, had slept badly and woken up with sore backs. After a simple breakfast, they had packed their things and set out in search of the tunnel. The trapdoor, built into a boulder and camouflaged by a thicket of ferns, had opened without a hitch. Once inside, they had discovered four empty wagons and a ramp.
Finished, said Rodario, putting away his quill. You'll be pleased to know that the elves play a none too courageous role in this epic.
He beamed at them.
Gerdlegard will hear how the warriors of Alandur declined to come to its rescue.
At least we found the entrance to the tunnel,
Belindis said brightly, trying to lift the mood. Bowindel ran his finger experimentally along his blades.
I suppose that's something. The question is, will we reach our destination, or end up being ambushed and eaten by a war band of orcs?
A menacing smile crept over his face.
Don't worry. My axes will take care of them. I'm longing to slit their runty throats.
As always, on such occasions, he glanced sharply at Jerun to remind him not to interfere. Tungdil turned to Narmora, who seemed calmer now that they were leaving.
How are you feeling?
She smiled. Better. It was hard for me in the forest, surrounded by so much elvishness. I've got my mother to blame for that. He cleared his throat.
Are you nervous?
About the showdown with Nodorn? She squeezed Fergus's hand. No, not really. Although once the Magus is standing in front of me, it will be a different story. Still, I've rehearsed what to do, so it should be all right.
Of course it will be all right,
roared Bowindil.
We'll pop up behind the army and plow through the ranks. Before the runts know what's hit them, you'll whip out Keenfire and strike the Magus in the back. He'll die, and Gerdlegard will be saved.
Narmora smiled. A fine plan, but I'd like to try something a little more daring. How about I pretend to be an elf? I can play the part to perfection. I'll be able to get past Nodon's guards and apprentices without arousing suspicion.
I don't mean to be rude, Andukai said doubtfully, but why would Nodon be interested in an ordinary elf? You'll never get close enough.
Narmora rearranged her headscarf.
I'll think of something.
Of course.
Tungdil broke into a grin. He had just remembered a story from one of Lothionen's books. The heroes had used a simple but effective trick that could work for them as well.
"He'll be interested, all right, when you deliver the hostages that he's been waiting for."
"What kind of hostages?" asked Boindil.
Then it dawned on him.
"What? You want us to give ourselves up?"
he protested.
"No, we'll fight our way through, like I said."
"My dear fellow," Rodario interrupted sweetly, "I don't wish to reawaken painful memories, but remember what happened in the Fifthling Kingdom? Your axes made little impression on the hordes of baying beasts."
"Precisely my point," Tungdil nodded. "We'll be outnumbered. That's why Rodario, Fergus, and Andokai will pretend to be mercenaries who helped Narmora to capture us. Jerun will have to stay here. His presence would give us away."
"It's a risky strategy, but it might just work," Andokai said earnestly. "I'm in favor." Rodario tapped his lip pensively.
"Haven't I read something like that before?"
"Do you mean the death of Herengard? In the story, the heroes need to kill the evil monarch. They use the same tactic, and it works,"
explained Tungdil, owning up to his source.
"You mean you borrowed it from a book?"
Boindil protested, aghast.
"But you can't!"
"Remember what I told you when we met. Reading is important."
Tungdil clapped the warrior on the back.
"Maybe you'll believe me now. Let's have a show of hands."
The motion was passed with only one objection. Offended at not being listened to, Boindil sulked in silence, not even cheering and whooping when the wagon plunged downhill. Tungdil chose not to mention the end of the story. King Herengard's valiant killers had been slain by his guards. It was a good strategy nonetheless. Once again, their journey took them deep below the surface of Gerdlegard. They were headed for the Black Saddle, where Nadon was mustering his army of orcs and other vile beasts. Little did they know that the tunnel was preparing to surprise them again. On rounding a corner, they saw upturned wagons and mounds of orcish corpses piled on both sides of the rail. There must have been at least 200 bodies in all. They couldn't stop because of the momentum, so they leaned out of the wagon to get a better look.
"By my beard, this is the work of axes if ever I saw it," growled Boindil. "You can bet they were slaughtered by dwarves. Our kinsfolk must be doing better than we thought."
"It seems funny to be fighting in the tunnels when there's a perfectly good stronghold in the Black Saddle. Why haven't they ensconced themselves there?"
Tungdil dangled over the side to inspect the corpses, which were stacked neatly away from the rail.
"Someone wanted to make sure that nothing and no one got in our way."
He was instantly reminded of the spirits whom they had encountered twice before.
"The ghosts! They helped us in the Fifthling Kingdom, remember?"
Belindis pointed to a niche in the tunnel, where a small figure lay contorted on the floor. An orcish spear protruded from its side.
"That's not a ghost," she said. "Ghosts don't have corpses."
"I wonder if there's such a thing as tunnel-dwelling dwarves," speculated Fergus. "It struck me a while ago that the rail looked nice and shiny. Someone's been using it regularly, I'd say."
Tunnel-dwelling dwarves?
The network had been abandoned for such a long time that a band of dwarves could easily have settled in the tunnels. Tungdil could only guess at an explanation.
They must have been banished by the ancient folks.
He was gripped by excitement. It was entirely plausible that outcasts from the various clans and folks had learned of the tunnels and founded their own community many cycles ago.
Perhaps they didn't want to go back to their kingdoms. "Quick, lend me your quill, Rodario,"
he said, grabbing the ink and parchment and scribbling a hurried thank you letter. His handwriting was almost illegible because of the juddering wagon. They sped past a stalagmite and he pinned the note on top.
"Can spirits read?"
inquired Andokai.
"They're not spirits," he answered. "If my suspicions are correct, they're dwarves, outcasts from the Five Kingdoms who claimed the tunnels for themselves. We've been trespassing on their territory."
He gave a quick explanation.
"Remember how they kept warning us? The hammering, the collapse of the tunnel, the faces in the cavern. They were trying to make us leave."
"Fascinating, fascinating," said Rodario.
"And when the orcs turned up, they decided to help their kinsfolk instead of scaring them away.
Blood is thicker than water, I suppose. Rodario snatched back his quill. I'll add it to my notes.
We've seen so many new things, good as well as bad, murmured Belindis. I hope the good outweighs the bad when it's over.
It will, Tungdil said confidently. As they rattled around the next corner, he took a last look at the stalagmite. Unless he was much mistaken, a small figure was clutching his note. Their arrival in the former realm of Leos Nudin gave Andokai an opportunity to replenish her powers. She closed her eyes and waited. Almost immediately, the walls of the tunnel began to glow, revealing the veins and pockmarks in the rock. Andokai's breathing quickened. The light became brighter and intensified to a dazzling glare, then faded abruptly. Slowly, the Maga opened her eyes, turned to the right, and vomited over the side of the wagon.
What's the matter?
Tungdil was about to pull on the brake, but she stopped him with a wave.
It's nothing. Just keep going. Nodon corrupted the force fields.
She leaned back, and Belindis handed her a pouch of water.
I channeled some of the energy, but it would probably kill me if I took any more.
Her mouth snapped shut as she struggled to contain the next wave of nausea. After traveling for two orbits, they reached a set of points and continued alongside another rail. Suddenly, a second wagon rolled up and drew level with theirs. Its passengers, a dozen or so orcs, seemed just as surprised as they were. Ironheart was the first to recover from the shock. He reacted true to type.
Oink, oink! Come here, you runts!
He screeched excitedly, whipping out his axes. He glared at the others.
Leave them to me!
Before anyone could stop him, he had launched himself out of the wagon and landed axe first among the startled beasts. In his battle-crazed fury, he accidentally killed the driver, leaving no one in charge of the brakes. The wagon hurtled through the tunnel while the scuffle continued inside. Ironheart spotted a row of stalactites ahead and used them to his advantage. Maneuvering skillfully, he tricked a careless orc into dodging his axe and colliding face first with the hanging calcite. There was an explosion of gore and a peal of maniacal laughter. Then the dwarf pushed the headless creature over the side. The runts struggled to defend themselves as Ironheart slashed through their ranks. The suddenness of the attack and the cramped circumstances worked in his favor, and his frenzied cackles, along with the shrieks and howls of his victims, vied with the noise of the wagons. Soon he reached the last of the orcs, a muscular beast whose armor was superior to his companions.
Stop! Don't kill their leader!
Shouted Tungdil.
I want to interrogate him!
But the warrior was in the grip of his fiery spirit. Brandishing his axes, he charged toward the orc, who didn't stand a chance of deflecting both blades at once. Andokai barked an order, and Jeroen seized the doomed beast by the scruff of his neck. Like the boom of a crane, the giant's metal-plated arm swung toward the company's wagon and deposited the creature at the rear. The orc stopped struggling as soon as he felt the giant's sword against his throat.
Hey, that's cheating!
Undaunted, Bowindil leapt back into their wagon, still intent on hacking the orc to pieces, but Andokai barred the way.
Don't be foolish, Bowindil, she warned him coldly. I've replenished my powers, remember. Stop of your own accord or I'll make you. Tungdil's right. We need to find out what we're up against.
Reason and fury struggled for mastery of the warrior's mind. Panting for breath, he returned to his seat. Good sense had triumphed.
Question him if you must. I'll kill the other runts when we get to the mountain.
Tungdil turned to the orc and looked at him keenly.
What's Nodon doing at the Black Saddle?
He asked in Orcish.
I'm not telling you anything, groundling.
Maybe you prefer to tell my friend.
He reached toward the seated giant and flipped back his visor. Violet light bathed the hideous features of the prisoner, who looked away in horror and fear. Tungdil took care not to look at Jeroen. What he had glimpsed in the desert village would haunt him forever.
Or do you want him to bite off your arms?
The orc squealed something that Tungdil couldn't understand, then said more clearly,
No, don't let him touch me!
What are you doing at the Black Saddle?
We're besieging the groundlings,
the orc answered, his voice cracking with fear.
They tried to hide from us, but Nadon wants them dead.
Why?
How should I know?
Is he there? The orc fell silent, but kept a wary eye on Jeroen. Tungdil could practically smell his fear.
Is the Magus at the Black Saddle? He repeated.
When nothing happened, the giant seized the initiative. His head sped forward, and they heard a loud crunch. Screaming, the orc stared at the mangled stump where his arm had once been.
You're right! You're right!
He cried, howling with pain.
The Magus is at the Black Saddle!
When is he going to attack?
Tungdil asked pitilessly.
I don't know. I was ordered to be there in 4 orbits.
The beast groaned, trying to stop the gushing blood with his other hand. Green gore spurted through his fingers.
That's all I...
Jeroen hadn't eaten for ages, and the sight of a fresh meal was too tempting to resist. Without consulting Andukai or Tungdil, he seized the orc, killed it, and devoured its twitching corpse. His back was turned, so none of the dwarves could see his face. At the sound of the Magus' voice, he dropped the body like a shot, closed his visor, and sat back down. Drops of green blood trickled from his helmet, and there was a sickening smell of orc guts.
Throw the rest away, Andukai ordered.
Jeroen dropped the remains of the beast over the side of the carriage.
By the hammer of Vrakas, if we didn't need the giant for our mission...
Ironheart broke off his threat.
He's a monster. A tame one, but a monster all the same.
He glanced at the Maga.
I hope your god doesn't get tired of you and turn the brute against us.
His axes disappeared back into his belt.
I'm here if you need me. Just say the word.
Andukai declined to comment.
So Samusin's son devours his father's creatures.
Tungdil stared in fascination at the demonic visor. Jeroen's helmet was still glowing violet, as if an eternal fire were blazing inside his head. Tungdil caught Namora's eye.
The orcs were supposed to be there in 4 orbits. We've got a new deadline.
He turned to face the front and felt a rush of air that cleared his nostrils of the smell of dead orc.
Gerdlegard will soon be free of evil, or forever in its thrall.
Underground Network, Kingdom of Gauragar, Gerdlegard, Winter, 6,234th Solar Cycle. Later on, they came across another 50 orcs whose bodies had been stacked to the side of the track. Their mysterious protectors had been at work again, although they continued to hide themselves from view. The rest of their journey was uneventful, and they surfaced in the former kingdom of Gauragar, not far from the Black Saddle. Tungdil recognized the area straight away.
It's this way,
he told them, leading them to the hill from which he had first seen the Black Saddle. Crouching low, they scrambled to the top, hoping not to be spotted by sentries. They weren't ready to don their disguises yet.
Vrakas Almighty, we're not a moment too soon, he whispered.
The murky forest of conifers was gone, replaced by a ring of wooden structures whose platforms were crawling with miniature figures that looked like orcs. The towers were already dizzyingly high, but the beasts were adding extra stories in the hope of storming the stronghold from the summit or the upper slopes. They must have tired of banging their heads against the solid base of the Black Saddle, or perhaps the growling mountain had shaken them from its flanks.
It looks more sinister than ever without the trees.
Every now and then, black torrents cascaded from the hidden stronghold, forcing the besiegers to flee the streaming liquid or perish in its flow. Elsewhere, fiery projectiles rained down on the army from chinks in the rock, landing among the beasts and dousing them in oil. Countless troopers were incinerated in the blaze.
They've resurrected the old defenses.
But despite their losses, Nadon's soldiers continued undeterred. The beasts were swarming like ants around the base of the Black Saddle, scouring the flat ground for anything that could be used in their assault on the flanks. A detachment of ogres had been put to work splitting tree trunks and building siege engines. The defenders focused on toppling the towers, or setting light to them before the orcs could climb high enough to pose a threat. But it did nothing to discourage the ogres, who collected the debris and started again. Their smaller comrades milled about impatiently, desperate for the attack to begin.
"It's strange, isn't it?"
said Tungdil to his dwarven companions. He kept his eyes fixed on the mountain ahead.
"The Thirdlings built the stronghold to wipe out the other dwarves, but now it's the only thing protecting us from Nadorn."
He suddenly remembered the runes that he had found on his first visit to the mountain.
"Roused by the Thirdlings, against the will of the Thirdlings, drenched again, in blood, the blood of all their line."
He wondered what it could mean.
"I've never seen so many of them," said Belindis, staring wide-eyed at the beasts below.
The enemy had pitched their tents in a circle around the mountain, about a mile from its base. Their shelters barely looked sturdy enough to withstand the snow and winter winds. Here and there, black puffs of smoke rose skyward.
80,000 at a guess, Boindil said evenly.
He thumped Tungdil on the back.
"I'm not saying you were right about books, but I'd need more than my axes to deal with a rabble like that. Your plan will work better after all."
Rodario pointed west.
"Do you think those are Nadorn's quarters?"
He indicated a stately tent, far larger than the others, and draped in malachite-colored cloth.
"I'd certainly want a tent like that if I were the Magus. Canvas is all very well for the riffraff, but a man of authority deserves something better."
Fergus sighed.
"Thank goodness you weren't born a nobleman. Your subjects would have strung you up cycles ago."
"Not if you were around to invent a slower way of killing me."
They smiled at each other companionably.
"Speaking of inventions..."
Fergus gestured away from the main battleground and pointed to a band of ogres who were constructing a rolling siege engine. It towered 200 paces above the ground and looked far more robust than its foregoers.
"That should do the trick for them. They've used tiles on the outside to make it less flammable."
Hundreds of orcs descended on the contraption, swarming over its many platforms, arming it with crossbows and catapults, and stocking the slings with missiles and spears. The ogres finished the building work and bent down to push the tower toward the mountain. Bugles were sounded, heralding an all-out attack.
"It's time we did something," ruled Tungdil. "Namora, bring the prisoners to Nadorn."
She nodded resolutely and donned her disguise. A few moments later, they were faced with one of the deadliest creatures in Teon's creation. The transformation went deeper than the change of clothes. With each piece of Alf armor, Namora looked crueler and more menacing, her face hardening and paling. As she straightened up, her voice sounded oddly sinister. "And now for the most important part." The whites of her eyes darkened, leaving nothing but fathomless blackness, the distinguishing feature of the Alfar by day.
"If I didn't know better."
To Tungdil, she looked exactly like a real Alf, which was precisely what they needed for their plan to succeed.
"Perfect,"
he praised her. Andukai got out the dark blue amulet that belonged to the dead Alf in the desert and hung it around Namora's neck.
"The crystal will ward off Nadorn's magic," she said. "I want you to wear it in case we get separated and you find yourself fighting on your own."
Namora smiled at her.
"Wait here. I'll fetch the armor for my mercenaries."
She slipped away noiselessly and disappeared. Tungdil noticed that Belindis had reached for her axe.
She's changed, the dwarf said defensively. "She's all sinister and threatening, just like a real Alf."
"What if her dark side takes over?"
asked Boindil, who didn't mind voicing his doubts.
"She'll have keenfire, and we can't kill Nadorn without it. The Mega won't be able to hurt her because of the amulet. How are we supposed to stop her if she turns against us?"
Fergus rushed to his mistress's defense.
"She's still Narmora, you know," he said fiercely. "Don't forget that she's an actress. No matter what she says or does, you mustn't doubt her. She's had plenty of opportunity to..."
Narmora returned, with an armful of bloodied armor belonging to some careless sentries. She threw the garments into the snow. "You'll have to wipe them clean," was all she said. Once Rodario had taken some special precautions, as he mysteriously referred to them, the company began the most perilous phase of their journey yet. Tungdil, Gandagar, Belindis and Boindil took their places at the heart of the group, surrounded by their captors, whose faces were hidden by their foul-smelling helmets. Narmora had swaddled Keenfire in rags and was carrying the weapon on her back. Jeroen stayed behind, poised to charge down the hillside and cut down the enemy if his mistress should signal for help. Boindil found it especially difficult to be separated from his beloved axes. Worse still, his hands were bound, a circumstance he tolerated only because they couldn't get to Nodon by any other means. A worrying thought occurred to him.
"Tell me again how the story ended."
Rodario opened his mouth to enlighten him, but Tungdil cut him off.
"Happily,"
he said firmly. He locked gazes with the impresario, pleading with him to let the falsehood stand. Rodario rolled his eyes, but refrained from comment.
"Just as well,"
growled Boindil, who luckily wasn't interested in specifics. Fergus had stowed the dwarves' axes in a sack and was ready to return them to their owners at the first sign of trouble. The captives were bound with leather manacles that would rip at the jerk of a wrist. All that mattered was that they looked like prisoners. The afternoon shadows were growing long when they finally entered the enemy encampment. Narmora glared menacingly at the sentries, three orcs and four Bognilim, and demanded to be allowed to deliver her prisoners to Nodon in person. The company was allowed to pass. One of the Bognilim rushed ahead to announce the arrival of the heroic Alf. The company strode purposefully between the tents, heading in the direction that the Bognil had taken.
"So I was right," came a muffled voice from Rodario's helmet. "I knew it had to be Nodon's tent."
"Silence!" commanded Narmora in her sinister Alf's voice, and the impresario refrained from further comment. By now they had a clear view of the dark green cloth that was housing the source of Gerdlegard's ills. They were only 20 paces away when the tent opened and an old acquaintance emerged. Pointy ears, handsome features, and long fair hair.
"Synthorus!"
gasped Tungdil in horror. Boindil leaned over.
"Was he in the story too?"
The Alf was smiling maliciously. He was wearing a Teonium breastplate and a long Teonium mail shirt that reached as far as his knees. He was prepared for battle.
"It's always a pleasure to see you,"
he said to Tungdil with a bow. Then he turned to Narmora.
"Congratulations on capturing the prisoners, Miss..."
"Morana," she said, furnishing herself with an Alf name.
"Morana,"
he repeated.
"Teon must prize you highly. Cavalor and I hunted the groundlings across the length and breadth of Gerdlegard, with no success."
His cruel eyes roved coldly over the little band. It was impossible to tell exactly who he was looking at.
"We inflicted some casualties, it seems."
"And yet they evaded you,"
she said scornfully. She decided not to be intimidated and to play the part of the arrogant stranger.
"Yes, they evaded us."
Synthorus sighed with feigned regret.
"But we have them now. I'll take them to Nodon. You may go."
Narmora stood her ground.
"I captured them. Why should I let you steal my reward?"
Synthorus circled her menacingly.
"You've got courage, young Alf. It's strange that I've never heard your name."
"Jon Balsur is a big place. I don't believe we've met."
"You're from Jon Balsur? I know every inch of our kingdom. I founded it."
He stopped in front of her.
"What of your mother and father? Where do you live, Morana?"
"That needn't concern you," she retorted, unmoved. "Hurry up and tell Nodon I'm here to see him, or get out of my way."
"The Magus is asleep."
"Then wake him."
Tungdil was still reeling from the shock of meeting Synthorus.
"What are we to do? Should we walk past him? If it comes to a fight, some of us will die."
He glanced at Nodon's tent, which was tantalizingly close.
"If we wait too long, we'll only attract an audience, which is the last thing Narmora needs."
He couldn't see that they had a choice.
Come and listen to this, Cuffalor.
Synthorus threw back his head and laughed.
I've got a young elf here who isn't afraid of her elders. It could be the death of her one day.
She ought to be taught some respect,
someone said behind them. Rodario was caught off guard by the voice and whipped around, almost taking Belindus's head off with his lance. His armor, which was slightly too big for him, clunked noisily. Behind them was an elf with long, dark hair. Tungdil recognized him immediately as the sinister bowman who had shot at him in Goodwater and tracked the company through the Red Range. He knew they had to do something, but he couldn't for the life of him think what.
I knew a Marana once, but she didn't look like you. Besides, the Marana I'm thinking of is dead.
Cuffalor's fathomless eyes settled on Namora. He was wearing Tionium-plated leather armor that seemed to swallow the sunlight.
You're not from John Balsur, are you?
He laid his slender fingers on the hilt of his sword.
Why did you lie to us? Tell us where you're from.
By now, Boindil was becoming restless. His eyes darted back and forth, and he glanced at Tungdil, waiting for his command.
Should we attack? If we do, they're bound to overpower us.
Tungdil didn't know what to do. The Alfar's ambush was entirely unexpected, and it looked as though neither Synthorus nor Cuffalor had any intention of allowing Namora to deliver her prisoners to Nodon.
I've had enough of your games, she said, her voice trembling slightly.
For all her acting experience, she couldn't control her fear.
If you won't take me to him, I'll call him myself.
She shouted out to Nodon. The Alfar laughed.
That's too bad, Synthorus said spitefully.
You're not the only one who's been lying. The Magus is mustering his troops by the tower. We're just about to join him. My spear is looking forward to wetting itself on dwarfish blood.
The tower?
She glanced at the mercenaries and the dwarves.
Then that's where I'll take them.
She was about to push past Synthorus when he whipped out his sword. Before the blade reached her neck, she parried the blow.
Another trick like that, and I'll kill you, she said menacingly.
A knife whistled over the dwarves' heads, its sharp point embedding itself in the half-elf's armpit. She cried out in pain.
My Marana sounded different as well, Cuffalor said grimly.
Fergus couldn't contain himself any longer and lunged at the aggressor. The elf stepped nimbly out of the way of his spear, drew his sword, and feigned a swipe at his head. Fergus fell for the ruse and readied himself to parry the blow. The dark-haired elf rammed his sword into Fergus's belly. The propmaster sank to his knees, groaning.
Quick!
Tungdil shouted to Rodario, who was rooted with shock. The impresario grabbed the sack and tossed the weapons to the dwarves. Throwing off their leather manacles, they seized their axes and hurled themselves on their hated foes. As Rodario backed away from the smiling Synthorus, Ironheart leapt into the breach, his axes twirling ferociously.
So you want to dunk your toothpick in some dwarf blood, do you, Hollow Eyes?
He slashed at the elf's hips, forcing him away from Rodario. The impresario seized his chance and fled. Ironheart took another step toward his opponent.
You'd better be quick, because my axes are hungry for owl flesh!
They fell on each other, and Belindus and Gandogar threw themselves into the mix, ignoring Boindil's indignant shouts. Andokai and Tungdil were left to deal with Cuffalor, while the injured Namora went to Fergus's aid. The half-elf's wound was relatively minor. The knife had missed the vein, nicking the flesh and drawing blood. But Fergus was in a critical state. By the time Namora got to him, he was breathing shallowly, fumbling with his visor and struggling for air.
Fergus, my love, she said soothingly, pressing on his abdomen to stem the bleeding.
The color returned to her eyes as she tended to him anxiously. Blood continued to gush from the wound. With a wild curse, she jumped to her feet, pushed Andokai away from Cuffalor, and harried the elf with a series of blows.
I'll take care of him. You see to Fergus, she ordered. He'll die if you don't.
Her eyes darkened to hollows. Andokai retreated with a nod.
How moving,
Kafalor said scornfully.
I shouldn't worry, though. You'll be united in death.
He dodged her weapon and kicked Tungdil elegantly in the chest. The dwarf fell backward and sat down with a thud. Kafalor smiled at Narmora.
Let's have some fun before I kill you.
He parried her next blow and punched her in the face. Struggling to keep her balance, she managed to duck beneath his sword. But his knee powered into her nose, and she straightened up, placing herself unknowingly within reach of his blade. Without stopping to think, Tungdil hurled his only axe at the elf. Boindil would have disapproved of the tactic, but he didn't know what else to do. The blade whistled as it arced through the air, alerting Kafalor to the danger. In a movement so swift that Tungdil scarcely saw it happen, Kafalor caught the weapon by the haft and tossed it back. The elf used the momentum to whirl like a spinning top toward Narmora and knock her sideways. He raised his sword to kill her as she fell. Tungdil had no time to dodge the flying axe, which hit him pole first in the chest. His ribs cracked audibly, and the pain was terrible, but it could have been far worse.
Leave her to me, Kafalor!
A hoarse voice commanded. The elf froze and turned to see Nodon, who had appeared out of nowhere.
But master, you...
His confusion lasted long enough for Narmora to sit up and thrust her blade into the crouching elf's neck. The blow almost parted his head from his shoulders. But Kafalor took one last lunge at her, slashing at her throat, then toppling over and burying her beneath him. Synthorus let out a terrible howl. He realized that his friend was dead, and that the distraction was the work of an impostor. Glancing at his opponents, he decided that the odds were against him. He had sacrificed his amulet already, and was no match for the Maegar on his own.
We'll meet again,
he promised.
Synthorus will be your death.
With that, he disappeared into the tent. Tungdil and his companions chased after him, but found the Magus's quarters deserted.
Damn that elf! He's tricked us again!
Rodario, still posing as the Magus, had stayed outside to disperse the crowd of startled beasts. He instructed them to return to the battle and kill any of their comrades who weren't fighting savagely enough.
I'll take care of the treacherous sorceress myself.
He stabbed a finger at Andokai and muttered a few unintelligible words.
Take that!
The Maegar sank obligingly to the ground. Impressed by the Magus's power, the orcs and Bognalim backed away, bowing respectfully.
An unsophisticated audience is a gift from above, he murmured gratefully into his malachite cowl.
His heart had been in his throat throughout the scene. He checked that the coast was clear and beckoned to Andokai.
No one's looking. Come quickly, estimable Maegar. Narmora needs your help.
The Maegar crouched over the half-elf and began a healing incantation to close the wound, while Rodario stood in front of them, spreading out his voluminous robes to hide them from view.
Incidentally, you'd make a wonderful actress. I've never seen anyone die with such conviction.
This is no time for flattery, she rebuked him, concentrating on her charm. As quickly and discreetly as possible, they carried the dead elf and their two wounded companions into the tent and held a whispered conference. Boindil peered out of the flap and kept watch.
Synthorus is bound to tell the Magus about us, said Tungdil.
He glanced down at Fergus's motionless form. Andokai had induced a deep healing sleep in the hope that he would recover. Narmora was stroking his hand comfortingly, but she herself was shaking all over, and her throat was smeared with blood.
Nodon will be expecting us, said Andokai,
glancing around the tent.
It won't make things any easier, but at least we've got another elf outfit.
She stripped the dead Kafalor unceremoniously of his mail and strapped it to her body. It was tight in some places and loose in others, but with her visor down and in the company of Narmora, she looked reasonably convincing.
With any luck, Nodon won't notice the difference until it's too late. How do you feel about posing as the Magus again, Rodario? Do you think you'd be able to get us as far as Nodon?
Tungdil was already working on a new plan.
With pleasure.
He tugged on the straps that looped beneath his improvised stilts. He was standing on a pair of helmets.
I get quite a kick out of being a notorious wizard.
Grinning, he made a final check of his flamethrower and rearranged the air-filled leather pouches that inflated his girth.
"Let the show begin. Our beastly spectators are waiting.
Don't lay it on too thick, or they'll tear you to pieces before we can stop them," warned Tungdil. "All right, here's the story." He pointed to Belindis, Boindil, Gandagar, and himself. "The four of us are defectors. We're under your spell, and we're showing you how to infiltrate the stronghold." Andukai picked up Fergus's helmet and placed it on her head. It didn't look right with the elaborate Alf armor, but at least it hid her face.
"Blasted ogres," gasped Boindil,
peering through the tent flap.
"They've pushed the tower right up against the mountain. They're going to do it this time."
He screwed his eyes up in concentration.
"I think I can see the Magus. He's on the middle platform and he's..."
He stopped short, too anxious to continue. The others rushed to the door to see for themselves what was happening. The Black Saddle was quaking under the force of Nodon's attack. Black bolts sped from his staff and zigzagged over the slopes. The noise of crackling, spluttering lightning carried as far as the tent. The stubborn mountain stood firm, resisting the assault. Just then, a mighty bolt slammed into its flank, forcing it apart. A mass of fractured rock thundered down the slopes, raising vast clouds of dust. Ledges and overhangs collapsed, laying open the passageways that led into the stronghold. The troops on the tower prepared to disembark. Each platform was equipped with hastily constructed gangplanks, which the beasts angled toward the pitted surface of the once sheer slope. The first orcs were halfway across before the planks had touched down. They stormed into the stronghold, to be met by dwarven axes. Nodon made certain that enough troopers were inside, then stepped onto a gangplank and followed them unhurriedly into the stronghold.
"At least we know where he is."
Tungdil took a deep breath.
"We'll have to leave Fergus here," he decided. "It's safer than taking him with us. Are you ready?"
Namora and Rodario nodded. As they strode past rows of kneeling beasts who were too dim-witted to see through their disguise, Boindil had a sudden feeling that they had forgotten something important, and he couldn't think what. They remained on guard, knowing that Synthoros was still at large and could ambush them at any moment. Mercifully, the crowds were too thick for him to take aim at them with his bow, so he would be forced to attack at close range. He hadn't shown himself yet. No one challenged them as they headed for the tower. Farther away, four smaller siege engines had started attacking the stronghold. They ascended the broad steps that led up to the platforms and strode over the gangplank that Nodon had used. To their intense relief, they survived the defenders' hail of stones and arrows and made it safely into the Black Saddle. Orcish shrieks echoed through the passageway, accompanied by the peal of colliding swords, axes, and maces. A battle was raging deep within the stronghold.
"I'll see to it that we don't have to worry about enemy reinforcements," said Andukai.
She turned and focused on the besiegers' main tower. Ogres were scaling its sides, hoping to use the uppermost platform as a stepping stone. Unable to squeeze through the tunnels, they were intent on assailing the defenders from the mountain's flat summit.
"You mustn't exhaust yourself," warned Tungdil, scanning the area for orcs. "We're bound to need your magic when it comes to tackling Nodon." "Don't worry. I know how to deal with them."
The fair-haired Maga conjured luminous blue runes that coalesced into a sphere. Hissing furiously, the ball of energy swooped toward the base of the tower and exploded on Andukai's command. The air crackled with the sound of an oncoming storm, and a gale blew up, blasting through the tower's solid timber and blowing away the tethers. The lower platforms folded like cardboard, causing the tower to wobble and tilt dangerously to the side. The walls blew out, and the ogres were thrown backward, arms and legs thrashing frantically like upturned beetles. They fell to earth amid the milling mass of orcs, bognilim, and beasts. A moment later, the tower collapsed entirely, burying several hundred more creatures under its weight. The shrill screams of terror sounded sweeter than the sweetest music to Tungdil's ears. The wreckage of the tower lay directly below the entrance to the stronghold, so the debris would have to be cleared before any of the smaller siege engines could be wheeled into place.
"That should keep them busy for a while," said Andukai,
eyeing her work with satisfaction.
Now for the traitor. We'll have to fight our way through to him, I'm afraid.
Tungdil gave up all pretense of being enslaved to the counterfeit Magus.
Enough of the act, Rodario. If our kinsfolk mistake you for the real Nadon, they'll rip you limb from limb.
Rodario stepped down from his makeshift stilts and took off his robe to reveal his armor. He stowed the props hastily in his bag. Belindus was still scanning the besieging troops. A cloud of dust had appeared on the horizon.
We need to hurry, she said in alarm. There are more of them. Where the deuce are they coming from?
Tungdil didn't care where they were coming from, provided that he and the others could beat them back.
How are we ever going to defeat them? Even if we kill the Magus, we'll never get rid of them on our own.
It would take a combined army of dwarves, elves, and men to see off the threat. He drew closer to Belindis and took her hand, drawing strength and courage from her touch.
We'll deal with Nadon, then we'll worry about his troops.
They raised their weapons and prepared to charge into the tunnels and overwhelm their enemies from behind. Boindil was in his element.
This is the way it should be,
he whispered, eyes glinting as his fiery inner furnace took control.
A narrow tunnel, more enemies than we can count. The first 10 are for my brother, but Fracas can have the rest.
Namora is our priority, Tungdil reminded them. She's the only one who can kill Nadon, but the rest of us must protect her as best we can.
Gandagar patted his double-headed axe.
No one will touch her while I'm alive to stop them. Destroying Nadon is all that counts.
Rodario was happy to settle for a less heroic role and stood back politely to let the others pass. While they stormed down the tunnel, he took a last look outside.
Come back, everyone! It's...
He stared at the fluttering banners of an army approaching from the east.
Aren't those the colors of Ido? Surely Prince Malin wouldn't ally himself with Nadon?
His eyes roved over the other banners flying above the rows of troops.
The crests of all the human kingdoms.
The first wave of warriors flowed into the back of a unit, hurrying to lend Nadon their support. Rodario watched in astonishment as the new arrivals mowed down the startled beasts. Not having reckoned with enemy troops, Nodon's soldiers took a while to realize that they were under attack. A moment later, the sky darkened and a hailstorm of arrows ripped through the air. The iron-tipped missiles glittered in the light as they sped toward the beasts. The Magus's warriors forgot about the humans and tried to locate their other mysterious foes. Firebombs were already whining toward them, crashing down and engulfing them in flames. Panic broke out.
Bravo for the elves!
Cheered Rodario, relaying the news to his friends. Gandagar grinned.
So the pointy ears have found their courage, have they? What are we waiting for?
Demanded Ironheart, fired up by the prospect of orc blood.
Do you want to kill Nadon or not?
They charged into the tunnel, their confidence buoyed.
As it turned out, they had nothing to fear from the orcs. Not expecting to be attacked from the rear, the runts put up almost no resistance, and the first 40 died without knowing what had hit them. The company found themselves at a junction with no sign of beasts or dwarves.
That was brilliant fun. Where to now?
Ironheart panted eagerly.
You know your way round here. Which direction will Nadon have taken?
He's probably helping his troops at a spot where he can't get any farther by brute force alone, Tungdil said, wishing fervently that the walls of the stronghold would speak to him as they had once before. Nothing happened.
The trouble is I can't think where.
There was a hint of desperation in his voice.
It's...
A dull rumble shook the ground beneath their feet, and a fierce red light radiated from the passageway to their left. Flames licked the walls in the distance, then the glow faded and was gone. Tungdil didn't need to give the order. He and the others were already sprinting toward the blaze. The smell of charred flesh hung thick in the air, the black, fatty smoke stinging their eyes and burning their lungs. They stormed out of the passageway and entered the first of three halls. The chambers were divided by roughly fashioned walls, but vast archways, each 9 paces or more in height, allowed them to see through to the final hall. A fierce battle was raging between the dwarves and the beasts. They seemed to be fighting for control of a wide door at the far end of the third hall,
where the clatter of blades was at its most deafening. Bright pennants fluttered above the warriors of Borengar, Beroin, and Goimdil. Poorly fashioned pillars supported the ceiling, 50 paces above. Crumbling staircases without curb or rail wound up the columns, which were connected by bridges that ran the length of the halls. The fighting had spread to the walkways, too.
"Come on, we're bound to find him here,"
Tungdil said firmly. At first, the company passed undetected through the turmoil, but their fortunes changed in the final hall when they spotted Nodon pacing along a bridge. He was watching the dwarven warriors struggling to defend the door against his troops.
"Look! I bet he's going to help them with his wizardry!"
Boindil ran ahead, speeding toward the staircase that would take them to the Magus's walkway. The rest of the company made to follow, but fate had ordained that they should fight a different battle. A dark arrow sang toward them from the right. Tungdil felt a searing pain in his leg and looked down to see an arrow embedded in his thigh.
"Synthuras will be your death," hissed the elf.
He was leading a band of 50 orcs, and a second arrow was notched on his bow.
"I will take your life, and the land will take your soul."
"Not mine, you won't,"
Tungdil thought stubbornly. He saw Synthoras release the bowstring and managed to raise his shield to ward off the feathered shaft of death. Cursing, the elf bounded toward them and ordered the orcs to attack.
"Quick, Namora and Boindil, you take the steps," instructed Tungdil. "Kill Nodon before he sees us. We'll watch your backs."
With a muffled groan, he reached down and snapped the arrow shaft in two.
"Stand by us, Vrakas."
Bracing himself, he raised his axe to strike an orcish knee. The stone staircase crumbled as they ran. The Thirdlings had chosen their material badly, and over the course of time it had chipped and fractured. Namora and Boindil were risking their lives with every step. They swept up the spiral stairs, winding their way to the top, and never once glancing at the fighting below. All their thoughts were focused on the bloated man in malachite robes who was standing on the walkway. With every turn of the staircase, he flashed in and out of sight. The air was getting warmer, and there was an overpowering stench of blood and orc guts. Only a few steps remained. Namora rounded the final corner, only to be confronted by a Famulus who was standing guard behind the pillar.
"Who said you could come up here?"
he asked rudely, mistaking her for one of Nodon's Alfar.
"You're supposed to be commanding the orcs, not..."
Boindil charged past Namora and rammed his left axe into the Famulus's crotch. The next axe sliced into the man's